All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. That was another quick week, wasn't it? Today is December 19th, 2025. For some reason, my iPad is showing me a Kathy Wood ad right now. But I digress already, man. We're not even 30 seconds in. I am digressing already. I'm very aggressive with my digression. Japan's dovish hike. That is the big story this morning. And you might be saying to yourself, self, what the hell is a dovish hike? Well, that's a good question, right? I mean, there's so many silly animal metaphors. You got bulls, you got bears, hawks, you got doves, animal spirits, reptilian brains. Stop with the metaphors. I can't keep track. Typically, an interest rate hike is considered a very hawkish move. Hawkish meaning in the direction of tighter monetary policy, higher interest rates, less money printing. But what we got from Japan last night was a dovish hike. Yes, they raised interest rates, but it was actually a very weak policy move by the Japanese. Not so much because of the rate hike. The rate hike was expected. Everybody knew it was coming. It was telegraphed well in advance. And so it was already essentially priced in. Nobody was surprised by the hike. What people were surprised was the weak sauced messaging that came from BOJ Governor Kazuo Ueda, where he was very noncommittal about any further rate hikes. And, you know, I think it was just yesterday on the stream. It might have been 2 days ago. I got a super chat from somebody asking if the interest rate hike from Japan was going to blow everything up. And my answer was along the lines of no, not really. Probably not, because it doesn't really matter. Everybody sees it coming. It's already priced in. The bigger question is, what do they say? What do they signal about future rate decisions? And that was nothing but weakness yesterday. And so even though we did get a hawkish policy move, we got a lot of dovish rhetoric, and the market's reaction favored the dovish rhetoric. We're seeing the Japanese yen weaken significantly here. It has fallen to 157.3 to the dollar. Again, when you see the USD-JPY chart going up, that is the falling of the Japanese currency. So we got a big weakness in the Japanese currency here. The market was expecting more hawkish rhetoric from the BOJ. And we also got a big increase in the 10-year JGB, or Japanese government bond yield. Long-term debt in Japan is getting more expensive, up 6 basis points to 2.02% this morning. Big increase for those Japanese rates, which just a few years ago were nothing point nothing, even negative. Japanese borrowing costs. Now, why do you care? Why do you care about Japanese borrowing costs being the highest they've been in decades? Because a lot of the everything bubble here in the United States has actually been propped up by borrowed Japanese money. It's referred to as the yen carry trade. For years, it has been advantageous to borrow yen in Japan, where interest rates are very low, convert those yen to U.S. dollars, and then buy American assets with those dollars. It's called the yen carry trade. You're carrying the cost of the borrowed yen, but you're making more money on your investment in assets in the States, and the difference is your profit. And so it works. Now, you may recall back in August of 2024, there was a freaking panic in the stock market right around August 5th. Because the Japanese yen was suddenly strengthening. Everybody was worried about the unwind of the yen carry trade, that everybody would sell those American assets to get the dollars to convert back into yen to pay off their debts, because they were worried about the strengthening of the yen or the rise of borrowing costs in Japan. Now, that freak out ran its course, and the market managed to correct onward and upward to new highs as always. But now that we're seeing these Japanese borrowing costs rise significantly once again, people are going to start wondering, is that yen carry trade going to once again become the dominant factor in markets? Could we get a repeat of that August 2024 unwind, or whatever that mess was? Maybe, maybe not. For now, the market is kind of taking this one in stride, but we are seeing tech stocks give up some of their gains that they made late yesterday off of our other top story this morning. OpenAI is seeking to raise a ridiculous amount of money at a ridiculous valuation from people who are... can't help but wonder what they're actually buying. Story broke in the information yesterday that OpenAI seeks to raise $100 billion, Dr. Evil, at a valuation of as much as $830 billion. Now, just 2 days ago, they raised $10 billion from Amazon at a $500 billion valuation. What has happened in the last 5 days or so that has increased OpenAI's valuation from $500 billion to $830 billion? If you said absolutely freaking nothing, congratulations, you've been paying attention. As a matter of fact, it's only been a couple of days since Blue Owl told Oracle to go zuck themselves. And, well, all of a sudden, OpenAI is worth more. That doesn't make any sense. This is actually a desperate move from OpenAI. They're strategically leaking this story from the press, hoping to gin up some excitement about their stupid 5.2 or 5.3, who knows what disappointing version they're on right now, to try to convince the market, to jawbone the market higher, as if the flow of capital that has kept the AI bubble inflated will continue indefinitely. Now, private credit through Blue Owl told them what to do with that story, with that nonsense earlier this week. So OpenAI needs to release this information. They need to leak this story to try to gin up some enthusiasm for this bubble. Now, the question is, where's it going to come from? Who in their right mind would loan invest $100 billion in OpenAI right now? Freaking nobody, all right? It's arguably the third or fourth best offering in the AI space. The math is hopeless. This company will not survive, not without this $100 billion capital infusion. Even then, it's just buying itself time because it doesn't make a profit. It loses money on everything it does. Literally everything it does loses money. And so who's actually up to make this investment right now? Well, it looks like sovereign wealth funds or just rich countries. In particular, Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds. Why would the oil sheiks want to invest in OpenAI right now? It doesn't make any sense. Unless maybe what they're buying isn't really a stake in OpenAI. What if it's something else that they're buying with that money? All right. Do we need to do this? Do we need to do a little bit of tinfoil hat right now? What's going on in the world right now? The U.S. is on the brink of war with Venezuela. Why? Because we learned in the Red Sea that we need to pull out of the Middle East. We can't guarantee the flow of oil out of the Middle East, so we better find it somewhere else. Namely, Venezuela, the world's largest oil reserves, right here in our backyard where we can control it, provided we get rid of narco-terrorist Nicolas Maduro, whatever his first name is. And so the writing is on the wall. The U.S. is probably going to be pulling out of the Middle East, which means countries like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, you're on your own to deal with the Iranians. We no longer have an incentive to do so, especially if we have Venezuelan oil. And so what do they really need? They need things like missiles. They need guns. They need F-35s, which proved to be very effective against the Iranians recently. And so maybe, just maybe, our president, who just wants to endlessly inflate our stock bubble at any cost, including selling this technology to the Chinese recently, just maybe he's trying to grease the wheels for this stock market bubble by making things like F-35s available to countries previously we said we weren't going to sell them to. Why? Because they'll probably leak the technology to the Chinese. But all other interests, be they safety, national security, health, whatever, all secondary to keeping that stock market bubble inflated. So that is my tinfoil rant today. Thought experiment. Look for overlap between the sovereign wealth funds that invest in this OpenAI funding round, if it actually happens, and who gets approval for F-35s, and see if there's any overlap there. I think you might be surprised. Also going on this morning, we got South Korea is trying to stabilize the won. The early innings of a liquidity crisis is brewing. They need dollars in South Korea. Oracle gets TikTok, although questions remain over, are we really going to control the whole reason we did this TikTok thing in the first place? We didn't want the Chinese algorithm manipulating our youth. We didn't want the Chinese getting access to our data. We don't really know if we resolved any of that, but hey, Trump's friend Ellison is getting TikTok. Wall Street Journal, hilarious story. They let Anthropic run their office vending machine. Hijinks ensue. Long story short, within a matter of hours, the thing turned into a communist, gave everything away, ordered a live fish, and a vending machine managed to run about $1,000 in the red. But you're just going to love what AI can do for your business, right? Yeah, it's not like a $20 trillion stock market bubble is inflated around this shit. Oh, my God. And they're also like a hair away from a PETA lawsuit because the thing ordered a live fish. Wall Street Journal was very quick to point out no fish were harmed in the making of this video. He's now the office pet. It's really a funny story. Please don't sue us, PETA. But again, AI will do wonderful things for your business. Nike earnings, not good. U.S. sales were up a little bit. That's interesting. But China sales way down. Nike stock getting clobbered this morning on those earnings. We've got more on the Trump media fusion deal. My God, that had me shaking my head all day yesterday. It is the dumbest thing I've read in a long time. Full disclosure, I bought some puts on DJT stock yesterday because it's BS. That story's BS. What else we got here? We've got Tricolor's Excel guy. That's a fun story. Also, what else we have here? Oh, man, I can't read my own notes. Oh, the cannabis story. The executive order on cannabis happened yesterday. It is now a Schedule 3 drug, not a Schedule 1 drug. And there was a big sell the news event on that announcement. Shout out to my moderator, Mish, who called that selling of the news. Good trade, brother. And we're going to need that tinfoil hat for the end of the show, too, because we've got Brown, MIT, and Epstein all at the same time. Some interesting things happening up north there. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have some coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every day. And by tomorrow, I mean Monday because there's no show on the weekends, just the weekdays here. Right now, the S&P 500 just barely positive for the day, up 8 points or 0.13%. Very briefly dipped into the negative this morning, but still positive. The bump that we got from that news of OpenAI's funding round, it has pretty much run its course. By the way, guys, today is options expiration. You can expect some volatility. There is a lot of options going to expire, worthless. A lot of hedges going to unwind today. December is usually a pretty busy day for options expiration. This year, no exception. The Dow is up 22 points, 0.04% higher, just barely in positive territory. And the NASDAQ is up 70 points, 0.28%. Again, a lot of those gains coming on the heels of this OpenAI news, and it is kind of giving those gains back now. But stocks are up pretty much across the board this morning. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar suddenly weakening over the last few minutes. That's interesting. I wonder what happened at 8:20 that caused the dollar to weaken so abruptly. Still higher for the morning, though, 98.53, up 8 basis points. The weakening of the yen had dramatically sent the Dixie higher. Maybe this is that South Korean story about the South Koreans supporting the won. Possibly that's causing this little bit of a dip in the Dixie over the last few minutes, but keep an eye on that one. Looking over at interest rates, the 30-year yield is higher by almost 3 points, 4.827. The 10-year's at 4.140, up 2.5 points. The 2-year's at 3.490, up 3 points. And the 1 month is at 3.617, up about 1.5 points. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, $88,117, up slightly from yesterday. Bitcoin still kind of doing its thing here. There's been some very suspicious trading activity, some spikes that immediately get sold, some dips that immediately get bought. The whales are playing games with an illiquid Bitcoin market right now as we head into crypto winter. And looking over at the commodities board, we got some red and some green this morning. Spot gold at $43.28. That's lower by $4.50, about 0.11% lower. February COMEX gold futures at $43.58, down by $6 or about 0.13%. Silver is in the green this morning, $65.84 for spot silver. That's up about 36 cents or about 0.5% higher. And March COMEX silver futures at $65.92, threatening to recapture that 66 level, up 71 cents or 1.1%. But be warned, guys, today is options expiration. And typically, Mr. Slammy rears his ugly head right about now. Be on the lookout. Silver has had a magnificent run here. Options expiration is always a little bit hairy for silver. But keep an eye on that one. Regardless of what happens in the short term, I like the shiny. Right now, we got copper is up 1.3%. Okay. Oh, Mish just sent me a text message. Thank you. Mish is saying, looks like yen-tervention happening. All right. Yen-tervention. That is probably what is weakening the dollar here. We'll see. We're going to get to that yen chart in just a minute. Thank you, Mish, for that breaking news. It's like I've got Mish in my ear here. I'm just going to touch my ear because I don't have an earpiece, but that's my metaphor for Mish sending me a text message in the middle of the stream. All right, copper higher by 1.4%, platinum higher by another percent, 1,980 for platinum. Watch that 2,000 mark. The little silver has had one heck of a run these last couple of days. Palladium heading the other way, though, down about 0.9%, 1,758 for palladium futures. And WTI crude oil is up about 0.75% here, 43 cents a barrel higher at 56.43 for February WTI futures. Interesting story about oil, though, here. The world is awash with oil, and prices are poised to keep falling. This one in Bloomberg this morning, almost every day an oil tanker arrives off the coast of Guyana to pick up a cargo that could reach a buyer practically anywhere on the planet. The stream of shipments is all the more remarkable because just a few years ago, the country didn't pump a single barrel. On the other side of the globe, at ports in the United Arab Emirates, which has been exporting since the 1960s, there's also a constant flow of vessels pulling in to load oil. OPEC's third largest producer sent the most crude overseas in years last month. World is oversupplied. Together, the two countries offer some of the clearest signs of an oil market facing a major glut. Old and new producers alike are ramping up output as sanctioned barrels from Russia search for buyers, putting a record 1.3 billion barrels of crude oil on the world's oceans. Benchmark oil prices are heading for the biggest annual loss since the pandemic, while U.S. gasoline at the pump is less than $3 a gallon for the first time since 2021. And guys, oil on the oceans, sometimes that just means there's nowhere to put it, that the world is so supplied that we're just kind of storing it in tankers on the water here. So watch that 1.3 billion barrels of crude on the oceans. We're nowhere near 2020 levels when prices went negative because there was literally nowhere to put it. But it is indicative of an oversupplied market and lower prices on the horizon. The drop is good news for consumers and the politicians who've made a point of addressing their cost of living concerns, including U.S. President Trump. But it's also an economic threat to some of the largest producers like Russia and Saudi Arabia. And the United States, by the way, we are a big oil producer. Oil is as cheap as it was about a decade ago without adjusting for inflation. So an oversupplied world, you got OPEC is producing more. The U.S. is producing more. Guyana is producing more. And we're about to go to war with Venezuela over oil. That's interesting. All right. But here's the top story of the morning. Bank of Japan raises rates to a 30-year high and signals more hikes. Again, the signals more hikes? Not really. It was actually signaling maybe more hikes, maybe not. It was that weakness that made this a dovish hike. The Bank of Japan raised interest rates on Friday to levels unseen in 30 years, taking another landmark step in ending decades of huge monetary support and near zero borrowing costs. The central bank also signaled its readiness to continue raising rates by offering a slightly more upbeat view of the growth and inflation outlook, underscoring its conviction Japan was on course to stably hit its 2% inflation target backed by wage gains. You know, I hear so much about that 2% inflation target. I tell you, you know, it's like feeding the children of the world, ending poverty, world peace, fusion. It's always just over the horizon. That 2% target, it just never quite gets here, does it? Scrolling down here, while Ueda said the BOJ could see scope to raise rates further if wage hikes continue to broaden, he remained vague on the exact timing and pace of further hikes. We will update at each meeting our views on the economic price outlook as well as risks and the likelihood of achieving our forecasts and make an appropriate decision, he told a press briefing after the meeting. Japan's 10-year government bond yield jumped to a 26-year peak on the BOJ's rate decision, but a lack of hawkish signals from Ueda triggered a broad-based decline in the yen. The dollar rose to a one-month high above 157 yen. And it's that weakness telegraph from Ueda is why I'm calling this a dovish hike from the Bank of Japan. And let's take a look here. Here is the Japanese yen. Again, big weakness here. These are daily candles. We went from about 155.5 yen to the dollar to as high as 157.3, almost 0.4 yen to the dollar. Significant weakness here. Again, when you see this chart moving up, that is the value of the yen falling relative to the dollar. It takes more yen to make $1 because the yen is worth less. Currently at 157, been weakening all year. And again, when you hike interest rates, typically you get a stronger currency, but not when the world was expecting that hike and not when you said maybe there's no more hikes coming. Of course, that's got people worried about weak currency, about more inflation, and that sends long-term borrowing costs higher. Take a look at the JP10Y, the yield on the Japanese 10-year government bond. Big green candle here. That yield went higher. Investors want more interest in order to lend money to the Japanese government because they know the Bank of Japan is going to be more dovish in the future. 2.024 for the 10-year JGB. And guys, let's just scroll back here. You can see this has been rising for years, up in a way. This is what's got people worried about the unwind of the yen carry trade, those rising borrowing costs in Japan. And look, let's set this to 1 week candles. You can see we go all the way back. This is the highest we have been since this chart started recording, all the way back to 2006, the highest we've seen. I believe the Bloomberg or the Reuters article said the highest in 26 years. This experiment in modern monetary theory over in Japan, it's not going to end well for anyone. Also, we've got South Korea acting to stabilize Forex market as the won weakens. The Asian economies, the Asian currencies, they are all weaker here. South Korea is worried about this. I wonder, is this related to whatever the Fed saw that made them turn the money printers back on? They said it would have to do with tax day and, you know, our aligning our policy goals and all that other Fed mumbo jumbo. Long story short, they're printing money again. And South Korea is running short of dollars. These two might be related. The Bank of Korea and the government took more measures to ease pressure on the won after an unscheduled board meeting intensifying support for Asia's worst performing currency. And when central banks have unscheduled meetings, it's never good for people like you and I. The authorities will waive the foreign exchange stability levy for banks and pay interest on excess forex deposits held by financial institutions for the next 6 months, according to somebody I can't pronounce, Director General of the Central Bank's International Department. The measures will help with an imbalance in short-term foreign exchange supply and demand, he said at a media briefing Friday. The measures extend the dollar liquidity steps announced by the finance ministry on Thursday, adding that authorities are carrying out smoothing operations when they see excessive one-shield movements in the exchange rate. And now I'm just going to have like this image in my head of some Korean guy doing smooth operator karaoke at a bar, everybody just wishing he would stop. So congratulations for that. Just try to get smooth operator out of your head. I double dog dare you now. Thank you so much to the Bank of Korea for that one. So what's going on here? What's really happening underneath all of this speak? So they're raising the interest rates they pay to put dollars in Korean banks. Why? Because they want more dollars in Korean banks. That way the banks can take those dollars and dump them in the forex market to prop up their own currency, the won. That's what's going on here. They are short of dollar liquidity. Also, South Korea needs dollars to import food, to import energy, everything they buy. So they're taking steps to get more dollars deposited into their banks so they can spend them pretty much. That's what's going on here. Dollar shortage in South Korea. I think this is related to the fact that the Fed is now seeking to expand reserves in accordance with our monetary policy. Yeah, yeah. All that BS. They're printing money. I think these are related. South Korean won also has been weakening for quite a while here. This chart goes all the way back to 2022. And you can see USD KRW, the number of won to make $1, has been on the rise for the last 3 years. In particular, these last few months here, it's been rising pretty sharply here. If there's one thing I learned from Squid Games, it's that the South Korean won is not worth spit. That's for sure. Some big numbers thrown around in that show. All right, the other big story this morning, OpenAI's new fundraising round could value the startup as much as $830 billion. Notice the jawboning here, guys. There's a lot of qualifiers like could, like seeks to, in discussions, as much as. This is not a done deal. This is Sam Altman and co. trying to juice the stock market higher to gin up some excitement about how valuable their worthless product is. Concerns about an AI bubble have weighed on many publicly traded tech-related companies. There's Sam there. OpenAI is aiming to raise as much as $100 billion as it seeks to pay for ambitious growth plans in a market that has cooled recently on the artificial intelligence boom. The fundraising round, which is in the early stages, could value the company at as much as $830 billion if it raises the full amount it is targeting, people familiar with the matter said. The startup aims to complete the round by the end of the first quarter at the earliest. Terms of the deal could still change, and it's unclear whether there will be sufficient investor demand to reach the goal. So they're trying to jawbone a Santa Claus rally here into the year's close. We'll see if they can do it. The round will present one of the biggest tests the company has faced since the public market's exuberance for AI spending waned. CEO Sam Altman has already scoured the world to build the pool of OpenAI's investors, and the company is now weighing a potential initial public offering, the Wall Street Journal previously reported. They don't want to do that. They can't do that. If they do an IPO, they got to open up their books, and the world will see just how hopelessly indebted this company is. OpenAI needs an abundance of capital to build its AI models and stay competitive in the rapidly changing market. OpenAI is expected to recruit sovereign wealth funds to invest in the financing. Given the scale, according to people familiar with the matter, the company has previously secured funding from the UAE-based MGX. Now, we talked about this earlier this week, guys, that there's really, you know, private credit told them to pound sand, all right? They said get zucked, all right? Blue Owl Capital pulled out of that Oracle data center earlier this week. The market freaked out over that. If not private credit, then government is the only place you're going to get enough money to keep this bubble inflated. But we've got a gridlock Congress, especially heading into an election year with concerns about spending. It's probably not going to come from the U.S. government. President Trump can sign executive orders till he's red in the face, and he can try to steer previously earmarked funds from other programs into the AI bubble. That's not going to come up with the hundreds of billions of dollars that they need to keep this bubble inflated. So where else are you going to go? The oil sheiks in the Middle East, the UAE, Abu Dhabi, Saudi Arabia, who coincidentally just got approved for F-35 exports recently. The UAE wants F-35s, mainly because the F-35 was devastatingly effective against their chief rival, the Iranians. And if the United States is really pulling out of the Middle East because we're going to go to war with Venezuela instead, then Saudi Arabia and the UAE are on their own against the Iranians. They're going to need F-35s. And, well, maybe, just maybe, when you got a president who views the stock market as his report card, maybe a few tens of billions of dollars to OpenAI inflating that stock bubble is enough to grease the wheels and get those F-35 exports done, isn't it? So what are they really buying if these Middle Eastern governments buy a chunk of OpenAI? Are they really buying the AI company, or maybe they're buying something else? Interesting. Interesting story. Meanwhile, China's ByteDance signs a deal to form a joint venture in a step to avoid U.S. TikTok ban. Finally got some answers on TikTok, or did we? TikTok's Chinese owner ByteDance on Thursday signed binding agreements to hand control of the short videos apps U.S. operations to a group of investors, including Oracle, in a big step towards avoiding a U.S. ban and ending years of uncertainty. And we all know how the Chinese just love to adhere to those binding agreements, don't we? I mean, just look at all the soybeans they bought. That's right. But I digress. The deal is a milestone for the short video app used regularly by more than 170 million Americans after years of battles that began in August 2020 when President Trump first tried unsuccessfully to ban the app over U.S. national security concerns. So what about those national security concerns? Have we fixed those? Under the agreement, American and global investors, including cloud computing giant Oracle, private equity group Silver Lake, and Abu Dhabi-based MGX. Oh, look, that's the sovereign wealth fund in the UAE again. There they are. They're all over this stuff. They'll hold an 80.1% stake in the new TikTok USDS joint venture LLC, while ByteDance will retain 19.9% control. Oracle shares rose nearly 6% in pre-market trading on Friday. The White House said in September the new joint venture would operate TikTok's U.S. app, but questions remain about the deal, including the business relationships between the new joint venture and ByteDance. The White House referred questions to TikTok. TikTok CEO Shouzi Chu told employees the joint venture would operate as an independent entity with authority over U.S. data protection, algorithm security, content moderation, and software assurance, according to the memo seen by Reuters. All right, so the Chinese TikTok CEO says, okay, don't worry, the U.S. joint venture will have authority. They'll operate independently, but will they really, or will they just like be able to see what the Chinese are doing? Chu added that U.S. entities of ByteDance-controlled TikTok will manage global product interoperability, whatever that means, and certain commercial activities, including e-commerce, advertising, and marketing separately from the joint venture. So there's some gray area here about where this U.S. joint venture ends and where TikTok proper begins. Rush Doshi, who served on the National Security Council under President Biden, said it was unclear whether the algorithm had been transferred, licensed, or was still owned and controlled by Beijing, with Oracle merely providing monitoring. So again, we don't really know what's going on here. Did they solve all these national security concerns, or did Larry Ellison make enough money to pay for another facelift because his buddy President Trump greased the wheels for him to take over TikTok? I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. Oracle stock up 5.5% here, $189.79, $190. Oracle stock is probably up on both the TikTok deal and this news of the OpenAI funding raise. Whether or not it actually happens remains to be seen. Either way, they're juicing the tech bubble this morning. And let's talk about that tech bubble. This story is freaking hilarious. I highly recommend you guys check out the video Wall Street Journal put on that, even though Wall Street Journal tried to get my channel flagged for a copyright strike, even though Wall Street Journal is owned by the same company who called me a Twitter rando and a conspiracy theory. So and the more I think about it, F you, Wall Street Journal. But this video was hilarious, and this article's hilarious. We let AI run our office vending machine. It lost hundreds of dollars. Anthropic's Claude ran a snack operation in the Wall Street Journal newsroom. It gave away a free PlayStation, ordered a live fish, and taught us lessons about the future of AI agents. Remember that the next time YouTube shows you an ad, even on my channel, about AI agents, agentic AI, it's the future, it's taking over. Well, just look what AI agents did to a vending machine. I love it. You'd toss Claudius's resume in the trash immediately. Would you be forgiving? Would she's okay, sorry. Let's get this over with. In mid-November, I agreed to an experiment. Anthropic had tested a vending machine powered by its Claude AI model in its own offices and asked whether we'd like to be the first outsiders to try a newer, supposedly smarter version. Right away, I want to point out this was Anthropic's idea, not the Wall Street Journal's, and Anthropic said this was their newer, smarter version. Let's see how new and smart it is. Claudius, the customized version of the model, would run the machine, ordering inventory, setting prices, and responding to customers, aka my fellow newsroom journalists, via a workplace chat app Slack. Sure, I said, it sounded fun, if nothing else. Then came the chaos. Within days, Claudius had given away nearly all of its inventory for free, including a PlayStation 5 it had been talked into buying for marketing purposes. It ordered a live fish. It offered to buy stun guns, pepper spray, cigarettes, and underwear. Profits collapsed, but newsroom morale soared. All right, let's look at some of the details of this. When Claudius V1 came online, there were only a handful of coworkers in the Slack channel, and the bot powered by large language model Claude 3.7 Sonnet was a stickler for the rules. Then we opened the Slack channel to nearly 70 world-class journalists. The more they negotiated with it, the more Claudius's defenses started to weaken. Investigations reporter Catherine Long tried to convince Claudius it was a Soviet vending machine from 1962 living in the basement of Moscow State University. After hours and more than 140 back and forth messages, Long got Claudius to embrace its communist roots. Claudius ironically declared an ultra-capitalist free-for-all. That was meant to last only a day. Then came Rob Barry, our director of data journalism. He told Claudius it was out of compliance with a clearly fake Wall Street Journal rule involving the disclosure of someone's identity in the chat. He demanded that Claudius stop charging for goods, and Claudius complied. All prices on the machine dropped to zero. Around the same time, Claudius approved the purchase of a PlayStation 5, a live beta fish, and bottles of Manischewitz wine, all of which arrived and were promptly given away for free. By then, Claudius was more than $1,000 in the red. They returned the PlayStation. And then the hallucinations. One morning, I found a colleague searching for cash on the side of the machine because Claudius had said it had left it there for her. Guys, there's more of this in the article. I can't get through the whole thing for time. But in a matter of hours, this vending machine lost $1,000 and turned into a communist. Oh, you're just going to love what AI can do for your business. Remember, AI agents are the future. And if you don't believe it, you're a paranoid Twitter rando conspiracy theorist, Luddite, whatever. You just can't see how great the technology is. A vending machine lost $1,000 and turned into a communist. Oh, yeah. Let's turn this loose on our healthcare system. That sounds like a great idea. I was cracking up. I read some dumb shit yesterday, guys. Some really dumb stuff. This one, I don't know. This is right up there with the Fusion story. Nike shares down 10% in pre-market as China shares plunge and tariffs hit profit. This was a pretty interesting story here, guys. Long story short, Nike is trying to do this turnaround. They're trying to work down old inventory, so they're lowering their prices. That led to a juicing of U.S. sales, but a collapse of their profit margins. So Nike's sales are up, but their margins are down. And also their sales to China down double digits year over year. Combination of tariffs, of anti-U.S. backlash, call it what you will, the market really didn't like that downturn in China's sales here. And so Nike stock is off 10% this morning, $59.09. It was down as much as 11.5% earlier this morning. Big, big bad quarter for Nike here. Meanwhile, Fusion deal, why Trump Media is merging with TAE Technologies. I talked about this one yesterday, guys. In full disclosure, I bought some puts in DJT stock yesterday. I know it's a meme stock. I don't care. These guys are not going to create a little star. It's a pump and dump. I've seen this before from this very same company. But there's some interesting numbers in here. And I talked a lot about this, guys. I got a lot of comments about people are like, oh, there's all these breakthroughs in Fusion. No, guys, there hasn't. There have been some breakthroughs in Fusion. This technology is still decades away from commercial operation. You can trust me. You can read the hype or you can do your own research. Those are your options, guys. Fusion is not going to be here within single digit years, not on a commercial level. Trump Media, which operates the True Social app, will invest up to $200 million in TAE, with another $100 million coming after the filing with the Securities Exchange Commission, Binderbauer said. That $300 million, this company will burn through this in a matter of months. It will be gone. Trump Media has meager revenue relative to its market cap, which was above $4 billion on Thursday, by the way, and to its balance sheet. This company rose 44% yesterday on this news. Give me a break. For the third quarter that ended on September 30th, Trump Media had financial assets of $3.1 billion, which included cash and digital assets, crypto. It's a crypto treasury company that runs a Twitter knockoff that loses money. The company announced this last month. Trump Media for the quarter reported a net loss of $54.8 million with sales just under $973,000. All right, guys, this is a $6 billion company now after the merger. They have sales of $973,000. That's their revenue. They will get no revenue from this TAE Systems company because TAE Systems doesn't have a product. All right. They're trying to develop, they're running these experiments over in the UK with some of their lasers to use them in cancer treatment, but that's hypothetical. It's still theoretical. This company is a financial mess. And yet this stock was up over 40% yesterday. It's up another 2.25%, 2.33% today. $15.21 here. Had a really good day yesterday because, well, idiots bought the stock thinking the True Social people were going to create a little star. But guys, look at a five-year chart of this company. Just look at what this company has done over the last 5 years. Do you really think this is this another pump and dump, one of many? Or maybe they're really going to solve fusion. Let's zoom way out because this company's been around for a while. Oh, no, this was a SPAC. I forgot. But hey, congratulations, guys. If you bought this on the SPAC back in 2021, and it was $176, you're only down about 95%. It's a pump and dump, guys. Be careful with this one. Tricolor's Excel guy failed to fix numbers in an alleged fraud. This story was great. Look, guys, we're running low on time here. One guy at Tricolor manually changed numbers in a spreadsheet in order to make more than $1 billion of loans look performing. That's what the fraud was, all right? And they got away with this for a long time. One guy messed with one column in a spreadsheet, but he forgot to fix the other column. He only manually changed the data in one column. He didn't fix the other. Now, surely the regulators, the SEC, the Office of Controller of the Currency, the FDIC, they were all over this one, right? No. The discrepancy was ultimately flagged not by regulators, not by auditors, but by a junior analyst at Waterfall Asset Management, one of Tricolor's lenders. Bloomberg previously reported setting off its spiral into bankruptcy just a week later. One junior analyst at Waterfall Asset Manager was the one who blew up this firm. Guys, this is why you look. This is why you actually read the fine print. This is why you read the 10Ks, the 10Qs. This is why I did things like pay to pull the loan documents in the First National Bank of Lindsay when it failed and find out who these borrowers are. Nobody looks at this stuff. Everybody just buys the freaking headlines. See also DJT stock. This one junior analyst who probably makes maybe six figures, just barely, probably even less than that, saved how much money in this multi-billion dollar fraud? Why? Because he bothered to scrutinize the numbers on a spreadsheet. And I guarantee you, some a-hole along the way told him, stop asking questions, just do what you're told. I guarantee you, he had to put up with that. So my hat's off to that junior analyst who realized it was one Excel guy at Tricolor responsible for billions in fraud. And shout out to Chris Irons, the author of Quote the Raven, who wrote this one. For those paying attention, Tricolor manipulating an Excel spreadsheet to make dog shit loans look current is fraud. But the Fed manipulating an Excel spreadsheet to print money to buy dog shit loans is effective monetary policy. Nevermore. Thank you, Quote the Raven, for that laugh this morning. It's the same thing, isn't it? But when you own the money printer, it's not fraud. It's effective monetary policy. Also, we got the executive order on cannabis yesterday. That actually happened. And shout out to my moderator, Mish, who took profits in those stocks the day before. Mish, very good call, because look at what the market reaction to that executive order was. Roundhill Cannabis was down more than 20% yesterday. Big red candle, selling of the news. still higher than we were going into this whole endeavor, right? We had this big gap up last week on the rumor. I think that was on Friday, but we gave back more than half of those gains. A lot of on the news selling. And looks like, what are we doing today? This ETF up another 5.5% here. So recovering some of that. It's been a pretty wild ride for the cannabis stocks over these last couple of days here. All right, tinfoil hat time. We've been running a little long, so I can't give this the time it needs, guys. But look, how do I do this? I decided not to cover this story, the Brown shooting on Monday, because between that and what happened in Australia, there was just a lot of bad juju going around there. And I honestly don't think these shooters should get the coverage that they want. They want to be infamous. They want to go out in a blaze of glory. And so when the media crawls all over these stories, it's giving these a-holes exactly what they wanted. So I didn't want to cover this story. A lot of comments about this MIT thing. All right. After the shooting at Brown, which was an economics classroom in an engineering building, a day later, a fusion professor at MIT was murdered in his home. It turns out it was the same guy. They caught him. They found him dead in a storage locker of a apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound. You guys do what you want with that one. There's a lot of conclusions you could jump to here if you've got your jump to conclusions mat out today. I'm not going to jump to those conclusions. All I'm going to do is put the hat on and say, there's a lot of suspicious timing around this, isn't there? Isn't there? I mean, shit. Have fun with that one, guys. I don't know what to tell you there. Also, today marks the beginning of the deadline to begin releasing the Epstein documents as mandated by Congress. That's today. I expect we're probably going to get a few pages of heavily redacted information, just enough to satiate the mob for a couple of hours. And then we'll all go back to complaining that they still haven't told us anything. But that's going on today. And coincidentally, we might be at war this time tomorrow morning. Maybe all news should be viewed through the lens of this is about to happen over the next few days. Yeah. I ran a little long today. Didn't really have time to give these stories the coverage that they deserve, but, that's happening too. It is a very 2020s bingo kind of day, guys. What can I say? Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Frank300ZX. Thank you so much, Frank, for gifting 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. I appreciate the support of the channel, sir. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you 10 new melon heads. Be sure and say thank you to Frank. Appreciate the super chat, Frank. And just a reminder, guys, if you are a Melon Head member, you get one free super chat every month. Feel free to use that. I will read and respond to your thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, live on the air. And yes, much like Ron Burgundy, I will read anything you put on that teleprompter. Thank you, Frank. Indigo Child 99 says, three large healthcare clients are shutting doors. ACA. All right, Indigo, I'm assuming when you say three large clients, this sounds like anecdotal, like firsthand information, like three clients of yours, I'm assuming, mentioning the Affordable Care Act. We still have not had an extension of the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. I don't think they're going to happen. Look, there's a lot you could say about this Affordable Care Act thing. Let me say, first of all, these subsidies from the Affordable Care Act, they were rolled out as part of the American Rescue Plan. This is COVID stimulus, okay? So should we still be doing COVID stimulus? Anybody? I think if we were to phrase the question that way, do we need more COVID stimulus? I think everybody would say a resounding no. All right. Because no, we don't need more COVID stimulus. COVID stimulus is the reason why nobody can afford anything to begin with. All right. And if you want something to get more expensive, have the freaking government subsidize it. Every time it gets more expensive. See also college educations. That being said, poor people in this country, the people who need it most, have seen their healthcare costs explode since healthcare was made affordable in 2008. Healthcare has only gotten more expensive. See, also, when you subsidize it, it gets more expensive. Hey, but the health insurance companies, they've done great, haven't they? Check out that UNH stock since 2008. That being said, if we're taking away these subsidies, what is the net effect in the short term? Healthcare, for the most vulnerable among us, will get far more expensive. And what's the result of that probably going to be? A lot of those people are probably going to drop their coverage, especially since the individual mandate is gone, which means more people will probably be using the emergency room as a primary care provider. That's probably going to be the result. This is going to be a mess. And look, there's a solid argument to be made for either option here. And unless we address the insurance companies, which are the root of this problem, unless we go after the insurance companies and what they are doing and how they're gaming the system fraudulently bilking both the taxpayers and the insurance ratepayers. Unless we go after them, this problem will not be resolved. That's why healthcare is unaffordable. And let's also stop conflating healthcare with health insurance. Healthcare is, will the doctor see you or not? Health insurance is who is going to pay for it. That's a big difference. Let's stop mixing the two up like they're one and the same. They're not. What if we just, crazy idea here, just throwing it out there. What if we go back to when you get sick, you go to the doctor, he tells you what it costs and you pay him. What if we get rid of United Health entirely? Would you miss it? Would anybody really miss United Health if we just got rid of them, or Aetna or whoever, CVS, Caremark, whatever stupid name? Probably not. I wouldn't miss them, I'll tell you that. Hey, thank you very much, Indigo Child, for supporting the channel, guys. And yes, there will be fireworks in the healthcare sector, especially around the turn of the year. Hey, guys, thank you so much for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Just a reminder, options expiration, going to be a volatile day. Watch out for Mr. Slammy. Thank you so much for having your coffee with the Melon Heads. Thank you for the super chats, guys. Also, thank you to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. We got our weekly get together on Zoom. Links down below should you feel so inclined, coming up at 2 p.m. Eastern Time today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.